We're back on In Focus News Radio KMAN, talking with Bob Koppel, Ascension Via Christi Hospital President and CEO, and going to talk a little bit about testing here in this next segment and kind of how that's going. And, you know, I've heard varying things here about how long it takes to get a test result back. Some people get it in a couple days. I've heard up to 5 to 10 days.
So that is all true. So the lab results from our community and actually the surrounding communities, they go to a variety of different paths to get the actual processing done. So some of the larger national labs that are actually, you know, very frequently used, they are seeing multi-day turnarounds. I've heard as high as 10 or 11. And that's just because of the sheer volume that is coming into those labs, specifically from some of the states that are really getting hard hit by COVID right now. So Florida, Texas, Arizona, California, and you have to understand they have multiple communities that have a bigger population than our entire state. And so that has really caused some problems for those who use those big national labs. And I know some frustration for providers who are waiting on results for that. And obviously, anxiety and stress for patients who are waiting on those results. With the swabs that go to KDHE, that is actually much more moderate turnaround, I would say. I mean, it's still going to be a few days, but the tests that go to the Kansas Department of Health and Environment in Topeka, it typically is a multi-day turnaround, but they're pretty consistent about that. And you can, at least you kind of know what to expect if you're sending a swab to KDHE. Over the last, and this has just literally been over the last 3 weeks, we've gotten additional testing capability within our health system. And so we have a large lab, AMS, in Wichita. We have another large, a bigger lab even in Tulsa called RML that's part of our Ascension health system. And so with those labs, the swabs we're able to send there, the turnaround has typically been 24 to maybe 30, 32, 36 hours. So much faster turnaround. It's the complexity of the lab testing, though, has also gone up exponentially over the last couple of months. And I have to get in a little bit into the weeds to explain the why when I would say that. So the way we've been able to increase capacity at our health system labs is by buying additional lab equipment. And if you'll buy a new lab device, the vendors will then commit to X volume of test kits and swabs for those new devices. Whereas they might not commit to those volumes of test kits and swabs for any of your existing lab equipment. So the only way to add capacity right now is actually to spend capital and buy additional lab equipment. Then the subsidiary issue with that is some of this lab equipment, the swabs and the test kits are very proprietary. So you have to have this swab go on to that device to have the test run. And so our labs, even here in Manhattan now, we have multiple different kinds of swabs. And so depending upon which swab is used for you, the patient, that will actually determine where your lab test is done, because you got to match everything back up. And so we do basically two courier runs a day south with swabs now. And so then depending upon which swab it is, whether it's going to go to the AMS lab or whether it's going to go to the RML lab in Tulsa. And it's a huge coordination issue, but the benefit has been by having that additional capacity, by having the faster turnaround, at least for those patients, we're able to get faster response. And then locally right here in Manhattan and actually in Wamego as well, we have the ability to do on-site testing now for our inpatient PUIs. And the reason, and the PUIs are the persons under investigation. They're the ones that are potentially COVID, and you just need to know whether or not they are. The limitation with that is that this was actually existing equipment that we've been waiting for those test kits for, like since April. So we finally are getting them, but we're getting them in such small quantities that we've had to prioritize our on-site testing is only for our inpatients. And so that's, so any outpatient test is going to go to one of our larger labs. We'll still know within 1 to 2 days. The on-site testing, I will actually typically know within a couple of hours, but that's for folks who have been admitted. And if you've been admitted to the hospital, you're obviously sick with something. It's just the question of, is it COVID related or is it just some other health issue that we're trying to address? So it's hard to get in all those details, but it's kind of the only way to explain it.
Yeah, and boy, you know, having the quicker turnaround gives you a lot more peace of mind. I know I had a sister-in-law whose boyfriend had to go get tested recently, and he tested negative, but, you know, he was out of state. He was from Illinois, but he was in Missouri, and we were finding hurdles to him trying to get a test because he's out of state, and a lot of folks, you have to be in county to get one of those tests.
Well, there's a lot of screening and prioritization. You know, that's still probably the biggest challenge, you know, certainly here in Kansas, but quite honestly across the country, the testing capability, we still, and we're testing more people now than we obviously have been. That's a good thing. But the ability to do additional testing and to do it even faster, that is still an obstacle that we have across the United States.
What about as far as pre-screening and such, how is that going?
So we continue to do pre-screening for all surgical procedures or planned interventional kind of procedures. And so a couple weeks ago, this was expanded to include our OB service. So if you have a planned induction, if you have a planned C-section, you know, all of those things are kind of scheduled, that you're going to have that pre-screening before those procedures, if you're having a colonoscopy, if you're having surgery, cath lab procedure, et cetera. And this is all about screening out anybody who is positive. And so far, I'm aware of, we've had two patients who were positive, and so their procedures were postponed. I believe Manhattan Surgical Hospital's had one patient that was positive, and so they postponed that procedure as well. And you might say, well, why would we postpone it? Again, don't always understand all of the science, but there is documented incidents where patients who had some kind of anesthesia, really any kind of anesthesia, and were positive with COVID, tended to have all kinds of different complications after the procedure. And it didn't matter how minor the procedure was, there's just something that goes on there. And so you're just trying to avoid complications, infections, anything like that that might happen after a procedure. So that's why that pre-screening testing is so important. You know, again, it's inconvenient. You're going to come in and get screened, and we have, I think, now a 3 to 4 day window. So, you know, Brandon, if you're having surgery on Monday, we would probably have you come in on Thursday. We would have had you come in yesterday, get swabbed so we can get the result back before you're doing your prep for your procedure, and so that we would know on Monday that you're good to go. But in the meantime, between Thursday and Monday, we would need you to home isolate, because you can't be around a lot of other people because you might get infected in that window. So it's a little bit of an inconvenience, but from a safety perspective, it's actually a huge deal. American College of Anesthesiology, or whatever their professional society is, they've come out with a number of research documents now about why this is so important that we're doing pre-procedure screening. And, you know, there's people that want to opt out of that. There's people who don't think it's necessary. And again, you know, this is where you probably need to have a conversation with your physician. This is all about your personal safety. We've got to make sure people are safe when they're having procedures, and they can then, you know, have your procedure, do your recovery, and get on with your, you know, the rest of your life. So.
Yeah, that's eye-opening, because I hadn't really thought about that. And I don't think a lot of folks probably are thinking about that if they have to have a procedure.
You know, again, this goes back to the we're learning.
Yeah.
You know, in March, even April, it's kind of like, that's probably something we should be doing, but not really understanding it. And then as more and more data comes forth from cases, you know, that's when you really learn all of these things. And it's like, okay, we need this safeguard, or we need to make this process change. You know, it's kind of like when we started out talking about the highly vulnerable people, I think that was a focus on everybody who was older. And what we've really come to understand is that age is certainly an issue. That's a big determinant. But so are things like, you know, do you have heart disease? Do you have blood pressure problems? Alcoholics, COVID is not a good mix. If somebody's an alcoholic, that tends to go poorly. People with asthma, people who are diabetic, people who are immunocompromised, people who are cancer survivors. The range of, you know, obesity, the range of who's actually in the vulnerable population really gets much larger. I'll go back to the caller's earlier comment about, you know, 2% of the population versus the 98% who are healthy. Well, when you start to look at all the comorbidities that I just listed out, it's actually half of our population would be in that vulnerable population. So that's why it's so important that we do take steps and mask and wash our hands and, you know, do those things, because we actually have a huge population that is vulnerable to this illness.
We're about out of time here, but I do want to give you a chance here to talk about a scam going around the community.
Oh, yeah. So again, since we got the opportunity to be on the radio, there's currently people being called in our region attributing themselves to being bill collectors. And actually, if you check out their number to call back, I think it was an 844 number, actually goes to a travel company in Florida, which I think is then attached to some sort of offshore deal. But anytime anybody's calling and asking you to pay over the phone or something like that, we would just really encourage members of the public to kind of just take a pause, verify who they're talking to, perhaps call the actual business, be it us or one of the clinic practices in town, or for that matter, any business in town, if they're saying that's who they're collecting for, and verify that that is actually true. In this particular case, it's not. It is a complete scam, and your money would be going somewhere overseas most likely, and not to pay whatever, if you did even have a bill with us. So we just really want to make people aware of that. That's something that's come up this week, because we've had some patients call to kind of verify, and that was the trigger for saying, nope, this is definitely a scam. So just want to make sure we could share that with your listeners this morning.
All right. Well, we sure appreciate that. And Bob, it's always a pleasure to talk with you on the radio, and we'll talk to you again, I'm sure, sometime soon.
You bet. Thank you, Brandon.
Again, Bob Koppel, Ascension Via Christi President and CEO. Stay tuned. We'll hear from Dr. Stephen Higgs from the Biosecurity Research Institute up next.